We as humans have always required.
We're going to be on next week. Definitely, we're going to be on next week. So you join if you're interested in this program. Join in, and you can call in at 204-774-6877. 204-774-6877. Well, yeah, it's nice, the show we are today, and I hope next week I'm going to come up with something even more interesting and more interactive. Well, join me next week, Thursday, 11 o'clock to 11:30, same station and same show, and I look forward to hearing you calling next week. I look forward to having the show on next week, and we talk more. Well, so take care and have an awesome week, and that's it.
The man who delivered me was a complete stranger to my parents. And because I was born without the fibula bones, and
listener driven, never corporate programmed. This is Independence Radio, CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
I deliver mail for a living. It's a good job, fresh air, keeps me in shape. A full set of mailbags can weigh about 16 kilos or 35 pounds, which provides a good workout in dry conditions, but come winter, it's a whole different story. In fact, every year, hundreds of letter carriers are injured due to falls on icy private walkways, not to mention countless other Canadians. So this winter, please keep your walkway clear of snow and ice free. For the safety of you, me, and everybody.
The following is CKUW 95.9 FM original spoken word programming, created by volunteers in the community, made possible by generous listener support.
Listening to Dark Matter Defined on CKUW 95.9 FM. I'm Jordan Poitras. Dark Matter Defined is your half-hour science research program bringing you research from the University of Winnipeg and beyond. Today on the show, we have three students, Jared Enns, Nails Depp, and Nick Reed, who placed silver in the International Physics Competition, and Dr. Kelly S. Klein, the chair of the University Physics Competition. But before we get to that, let's take a look at what sort of science is making news headlines. Joan Montagna at Polytechnic University of Catalonia in Barcelona and his team have caught wind turbines firing lightning on high-speed camera. They found that the rotating blades will produce a bolt of lightning each time one of the blades is at its highest position when the conditions are right. Published in the Journal of Geophysical Research, the team used a 3D lightning mapping array alongside their high-speed video to analyze the phenomenon. That story is in New Scientist. A study published in Nature tells us that honeybees that have suffered recent declines could be affecting bumblebees and other wild pollinators. Matthias First at the University of London tracked the spread of the non-native parasite called deformed wing virus, spread by a mite. First found that the imported honeybees are the biggest culprit when passing the disease off to wild pollinators. You can check out the full article on nature.com titled Disease Associations Between Honeybees and Bumblebees as a Threat to Wild Pollinators. And in 2012, Dr. Peter Ross was out of work as the leading expert on the effects of ocean pollution on killer whales and other marine mammals when the Department of Fisheries and Oceans cut funding to his Sydney, BC-based lab. As of Tuesday, the Vancouver Aquarium announced the creation of the Ocean Pollution Science Program to be headed by Dr. Ross. CEO of the Vancouver Aquarium, John Nightingale, says the program came from a gap of research that the federal government is no longer funding. Dr. Ross is an outspoken advocate for his research who believes that the feds cut his funding because the government didn't want to hear about the consequences for the petroleum and fishing industries. That story is from the Globe and Mail.
And now.
Another EcoFact, brought to you by Ecopia. Come visit us in the mezzanine level of the Bowman Student Center.
Did you know that you don't actually have to rinse your recyclables? The process of recycling removes all food debris, so you can save water by throwing them in a recycling bin unwashed.
You're listening to Dark Matter Defined. I'm Jordan Poitras. Thank you to everyone who donated to CKUW's fund drive. Thank you to Natalia, Ian, Steva, and Michael for donating to our show, Dark Matter Defined. You'll be happy to know that the station has made its goal of $60,000, which will go on funding the station's everyday needs. Because the station has reached its goal, we will no longer be playing ad spaces. This will really spice up the flavor of the station. If you still would like to help out the station or need to pay your pledge, make your way to the University of Winnipeg's bookstore, located in the annex. This week in our astronomy segment, the easily recognizable objects in the sky, asterisms, we have a big winter diamond. Looking to the south this weekend, you will see Jupiter at the top of this diamond, Sirius at the bottom, Procyon on the left, and Betelgeuse on the right. You can also catch Saturn and Mars in the sky together this weekend as well, but you'll have to be out there pretty early. Just as the morning light appears, you will see, at about 6 a.m. on Saturday, look to the southwest to see the moon, and to the right is Saturn, and then to the right again, just a few degrees up, will be Mars. This is all in a 20-degree radius. And on Wednesday, if you get up at sunrise, look for Venus. You'll see it to the right of the crescent moon, and it'll be pretty bright. That's it for the astronomy segment. This is Cary Latimer, Starry Night. Welcome back to Dark Matter Defined on CKUW 95.9 FM. I'm Jordan Poitras. Coming up after this is The Metal Lunchbox, followed by Radio EcoShock. The International University Physics Competition is one of the few places where undergrad physicists can make use of their expertise. Three teams here at the University of Winnipeg participated in the competition, all of whom deserve an honorable mention. Congratulations to Sarah Campbell, Stephen Kasson, and Veronica Fieldhouse, who placed bronze, as well as Gabriel Chernitsky, Allison Coley, and Dean Mikulik. And one team, who we will hear from shortly, did especially well. I spoke to Dr. Kelly S. Klein, who played a part in creating the competition. He is an associate professor at Carroll College in Helena, Montana.
The University Physics Competition is an international contest for undergraduate students. Students all around the world compete. We just, this year, we ran it for the fourth time. And in this contest, students work in teams of three at their home colleges and universities all around the world. And at the beginning of the contest, two problems pop up, two open-ended problems requiring students to use physics in an interesting, stimulating, real-world sort of scenario to try to understand something. And then in the course of 48 hours, each team picks one of two problems to work on, and then they must write a formal paper describing their work, analyzing the results, coming to some conclusion about things. And then the teams submit their papers, and they're evaluated and judged, and the team from Winnipeg there did very well there. So,
tell me about the beginnings of the competition. Were you on board since the beginning?
Yes, I was involved from the very beginning of the contest, and we looked at there are a number of prominent international contests in mathematics, and not as many in physics. And I saw students compete in these mathematics competitions, and I really like that. I think we should be encouraging students to go above and beyond the requirements of regular courses and to do extracurricular things, to do that purely for the joy of it, for the fun of it, for the learning experience. And as I said, there really wasn't a whole lot going on in physics, so a group of us decided to get together and try to make it happen. And the first year or so we did it was all very, very ad hoc. But we've learned a lot over the last few years, and it's fun to see how the contest has grown. And every year we've had more teams from more countries and more places around the world compete, and it's really fun to see what this contest has turned out to be.
Let's talk about the problems. You have two different problems. One is, I guess, it's a little more classical physics, and then the other one deals with even biology. So how do you create these problems?
The contest is run by myself and a group of other physics professors at different universities, and the goal of the contest is to try to get students to go beyond textbook level problems. If you're a physics major, you do a lot of clear textbook problems, and in a textbook problem, usually all the information necessary is provided, and there is one right answer at the end of it, and that's important and that's necessary in order to learn physics. We all have to do things like that, but in a more research sort of environment, physics is a lot more open-ended. So we're trying to give students a little taste of that, a little understanding of what physics is beyond the textbook level, to try to give them some open-ended questions where there might not be one particular exact right answer, but there may be many different useful approaches, many different useful approximations that each provide insight into the problem. And then to help students come to a deeper and broader understanding of what physics really is.
Here are the two questions that participants chose from. Question A, the space probes to the outer solar system will often use a gravity assist maneuver, flying past a planet like Venus to gain speed. When a probe reaches an outer planet, like Jupiter, it must slow down in order to enter orbit, and this can consume a substantial amount of fuel. It has been suggested that a spacecraft arriving at Jupiter could use Jupiter's moons to perform a gravity assist maneuver to slow down the spacecraft, thus saving fuel. Evaluate whether this is a realistic strategy to produce significant fuel savings for a spacecraft arriving at Jupiter, approaching Jupiter's system, at a speed of 20 kilometers a second. That's problem A, and here's problem B. Recently, astronomers have discovered Earth-like planets orbiting other stars. Many planets have been found in the habitable zones surrounding their parent stars, where liquid water and possibly life might exist on the planet's surface. Assume such a planet exists and that its mass is 8 times that of Earth, while its radius is twice that of Earth. The average surface temperature on the planet is 250 Kelvin. A four-legged animal has evolved to live on the equator of this planet. Produce a physics-based analysis on how life on this planet might be similar to or different from creatures that evolved on Earth. For example, consider questions such as, relative to a similar creature on Earth, how large would such an animal be? What shape would it be? How fast would it move? These are two very complex questions I would never even dream of answering. Students at the university were up for the challenge. I met up with the team in their shared office on the second floor of Lockhart Hall. Here's Jared Enns talking about their choice.
Well, you only find the contest starts at, you know, 7 p.m. or whatever our time, and a second 7 p.m. hits, the two questions are posted, right? So you only know the questions when the contest starts. So part of the contest is, you know, researching the question too, right? Because you don't know beforehand. Now, this year, the two questions posted, one of them was exploring extraterrestrial life. The one we did was it was called gravitationally assisted Jupiter orbit entry. So the setup here is that you've got a probe that's on approach to Jupiter, and the probe has to slow down to enter an orbit around Jupiter. Now, traditionally, if you want to use fuel to slow it down, that's very expensive, because not only do you have to pay to put the fuel in there, you have to pay to get that fuel off of Earth. So what we explored was using the gravitational pull of one of the moons to slow it down as it goes by, right? So it's kind of like, you know, you're zooming by the moon and the moon will pull you and slow you down and kind of set you into an orbit around Jupiter instead of using the fuel. So this not only saves on the mass, the amount of fuel you have to buy, but also the amount of fuel you have to use to get the probe even off the ground. So that was the problem.
And this is Niels Deppe speaking about the tools used to answer the question.
Did you use paper? What sort of tools did you use?
So the approach is, first you take kind of Newton's laws, F equals ma, and then you go from there and you get equations that tell you, okay, how does this rate of the change of the speed depend on other parameters? So how does it move? You get equations that tell you how your probe moves, how your planets move, and everything like that. And, well, we modeled it as three bodies. So you have Jupiter, you have a moon, and you have the space probe that's coming in. And you can't actually solve that on paper. You can't actually figure it out. So what we did is I wrote computer code that actually solved these. So you give it some initial conditions. You say, okay, initially I want, you know, Jupiter to be here. I want it at some point, let's say x and y equals 0, and then I want my moon to be at x and y is 5 and 5, and then my probe starts with a certain velocity at another location. And then this computer code kind of uses number crunching to estimate what it would look like, and then we just had an animation after the trajectory of the probe and the moon.
Okay, so now the information that you used for the moon and Jupiter, was that given to you somewhere, or did you make
the approach velocity was? So they told us, I believe it was 20 kilometers
yes.
per second was the velocity at which the probe was coming at the Jovian system, and that was it. Other than that, Jared looked up online, you know, okay, what have past experiments like this done?
Right.
What were their masses? What is the cost of the fuel? Because you need that. Once you know how much fuel you saved, you need to calculate how much money, right? So that it's a little.
No, it was not money, but yeah.
And then, you know, what is how much fuel do they have? How much would a probe weigh, right? Because you have cameras and blah 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 blah. And how many thrusters do you have? How efficient are these thrusters at burning
the
fuel?
What rate do they eject the fuel even? All that stuff. Yeah, the only number that they gave us in the problem was the 20. They didn't even say, you know, where it's approaching, right? That was all left to our assumptions. And then the moon data, obviously, we picked, I mean, Jupiter has
69,
a large amount of moons. So we picked Ganymede because it wasn't the biggest, but it had the strongest gravity field. So it would have given us, you know, the nicest results. And then, yeah, the probe, as Niels mentioned, that we modeled our probe off of was the Galileo project, because that was a probe that NASA had actually sent into orbit around Jupiter. So I figured I'm like,
that's the only one that they did around Jupiter.
Yeah, that's the only one that they've ever sent around Jupiter. So, you know, a little bit of research on that, what kind of thrusters it uses and what kind of fuel tech. I can't even remember the word. It's some big, long, you know, word with a whole bunch of enes and ines and tetras and hexes. And
how long did it take you to, I guess, feel confident with submitting?
47 hours.
Yeah.
And
this is Nick
minutes.
Reed. We're on that 48-hour time. So, you know, there's no really looking back. You have to be pretty confident with what you're doing throughout the whole thing.
Okay.
You can't really second guess yourself too much.
There's no room for error.
Yeah.
Of course, these students did have help. Maybe not for those 28 hours, but there seems to be some very dedicated instructors that do support them.
Well, I mean, the other thing to mention, too, is, like, we had, like, a faculty sponsor, like, Dr. Andrew Fry, the physics department. He coached actually all three of the teams here. So part of the coaching process, I guess, leading up to this was, you know, we met a few times over the preceding weeks and, you know, went over past winning problem or past problems and then looked at the past winning papers and said, okay, what were things they did that was, you know, got them the gold and stuff like that. So it kind of took a couple of techniques and tried a couple of the problems around.
Did you sleep?
4 hours a night, which isn't too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were lucky. We were able to get work very efficiently, so we were actually able to get some sleep and still be able to get results.
Again, speaking with Dr. Klein.
All right, so the students at the U of W here, they mentioned that they managed to squeak out 4 to 8 hours of sleep for the 48 hours. So how does that fit into the average mean of the rest of the groups?
Varies considerably, but yes, I think the teams that do well tend to be those you have 48 hours and you got to play your hours right. Trying to go without sleep for the whole entire contest probably would be counterproductive, because if we want to do physics and write about it well, we definitely need to have lots of clear thinking, and that sleep deprivation doesn't help us do physics. On the other hand, you want as many hours as possible. Teams that do well tend to be very focused, and they have some ideas that they know they need to pursue so that they can maximize the number of person hours that they can devote to the contest. It's a balance, but what they said sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty reasonable for many of the best teams we've had.
And one last thing from Nick, Niels, and Jared.
We just wanted to thank Dwight Vinson and the physics department for supplying us with sustenance and but also some financial support in that.
Yeah,
so
they paid for the cost of the contest. It's $35 a team, so they the department covered that. So.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, so that was very kind of fun.
But also Andrew Fry for, you know, coaching us and pushing us to do this.
He popped in on the weekend too to see, you know, just to say hi.
He made sure to cover his eyes, which was kind of funny. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, he was great.
If you want to know some more detailed information about Gravity Assist, you can point your web browser to www.jpl.nasa.gov/basics. We hit the streets like fugitives, getting lucky in the park where your daddy lives, holding your hand just like a teenager. From the cul-de-sac to the boulevard, pushing on the pedal, say stop. Hard as you try, you'll never be a stranger. Today will believe us. Today will believe us. Today will believe us.
Another eco fact brought to you by Ecopia. Come visit us in the mezzanine level of the Bowman Student Center.
According to the IESO, 25% of heat energy is lost through windows. This can be easily prevented by putting plastic window covers over them to stop cold drafts from cooling your home. You can purchase these plastic window covers at a hardware store near you. For more energy-saving tips, check out IESO.ca.
That's it for Dark Matter Defined on CKUW 95.9 FM. Thank you to Dr. Kelly Klein, Nick Reed, Jared, and Nils Depe for taking the time to speak to me. The program theme is written by Dana Rusty Matias. You heard music from Carrie Latimer and Royal Canoe. Thanks for listening to Dark Matter Defined. I'm Jordan Poitras.
Following is a CKUW 95.9 FM special presentation created by volunteers in the community, made possible by generous listener support.
Bonjour, tune in to Eagle Staff Nation, the radio show that highlights both contemporary and traditional aspects of First Nations culture and community. Join us weekly for news, current affairs, teachings, and performances. Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM.
I'm the Black.